the seventh chakra, the top chakra, is connected with the chakra where you merge back into the oceanic, into the one, totally. It is very similar. If you would look, for example, at the cyclic process of ocean mist rising off ocean, forming clouds. Clouds have raindrops. Raindrops fall into ocean. Ocean is made up of raindrops, but it's ocean, and it's ocean in the sense of oneness. And each raindrop doesn't retain its individualness as a raindrop any longer. And you can see this as merely process. The seventh chakra is the ocean. It's where it all goes back into the one. It's even behind all the laws and ideas, right? Now, when one is climbing this ladder, one is inclined at each new level, since at each new level there are certain characteristics. There is a new way in which you can receive energy or transmute energy in the universe. You can work with different kinds of energy when you are localized at each chakra than you could before. You eat different foods, you can work with light, with love, and so on, different ways. Also, you see the universe differently, and therefore your actions or responses start, your habits of thinking about it all, and thus your responses start to change with each new level as well. At each level, you are inclined to get stuck in that level, and you have to, at each level, go beyond that one too. Now, when you get to the seventh plane, what is usually the case for most of us that are doing this work is that we are very unevenly distributed in our energy over the different chakras or planes. That is, there is a certain part of me that is open in the fifth chakra. There is a certain degree to which I am starting to be opened in the sixth chakra. There is a way in which I am opened in the fourth chakra, very deeply open in the fourth chakra. I still have much energy attached to the second chakra, sexual chakra, and the third chakra in terms of power and so on. Now, the process is to slowly, quote, convert bindu to ojas, or transmute energy, or move it up into these higher and higher chakras, because every higher chakra is a more total organization of the entire universe in a more and more cosmic way of perceiving it and understanding and living with it all, which means a higher level of functioning, if you will. Right? So that the job is to keep taking energy from a lower center and moving it to a higher center. This becomes the work. So that what I can do is, through various techniques, I can center primarily in the fourth chakra, and then when something happens that is in a lower chakra, I can convert it to that fourth chakra. So that if I am centered in the fourth chakra, and a beautiful girl comes along, and I experience lust or arousal in the terms of subject-object, which would be a second chakra relationship, I can at the same moment see that she is God and I am God, and we are in the manifestations of male and female, and this is a eternal drama that has been lived out, and I can, in that process, make contact with that place in her which is behind womanness and I behind manness. And then we will either do out the dance or not, depending on what a lot of conditions are, but we are no longer stuck in that place of lust, right? So when the Bible says, thou shalt not lust, it's really speaking about, thou shalt not get stuck at the second chakra, is one way of saying that thing. Now, I would say that my own state, and most of us in the West that are working, is quite uneven and spread over most states. I have, through psychedelics originally, and more recently through pranayama, gone into sixth and seventh chakra states. And in psychedelics, I would stay many hours in what would be called nirvikalp samadhi, a very, very high form of samadhi, a completely formless void. Now, there are many reasons for coming back from that place into lower chakras or lower ways of organizing the universe. You can come back because of uncooked seeds. That is, because there's still some energy or libido cathected at those lower centers, if you want to use another formulation. You can say energy in those places. However, in order to fulfill the entire journey, you begin to understand what the bodhisattva role is in Buddhism. That is, that even getting to the seventh plane, you can get stuck at that place too, where there is nothing, And if you are at that plane to the negation of the other planes, you are still not finished. You are attached to the void, it's called. And that the final place you end up coming to is where you complete the cycle and you come back into every plane and you live consciously at every plane, because every plane is another truth. It's another level of truth. And you live the bodhisattva role, which means living in this world of illusion. At the same time, you are not in the world of illusion because you are fully conscious at the seventh chakra also. That is, you are conscious right across the plane simultaneously, right? So that the job finally is not to just keep moving it up, but to move it up until you are free of each one, including the last one, so that you are at all of them all the time. So you are the optimum being at every level. That must seem to be what it's about. Which means, because I can't walk out on the illusion if you're stuck in the illusion, since you are part of me. So if you're stuck, I'm stuck. So where can I go? I can't go off and finish my own trip at your expense, since who ends up being, you know, caught in that but us? And I'm part of us. I've already seen that in the fourth chakra, you see. So that the person can't really go on his own trip all by himself and forget it. Now, there are some beings whose work at these different planes is reasonably finished. This is something to do with karma. And therefore, at the point where they end up in the seventh chakra, there are some sadhus in India, for example, who go into the seventh chakra, and they don't come back, not because they are stuck, but because their work is done, in that sense. And then they have divested all of their gross body and subtle personality. They have divested any energy from it. And the rule of the game is, under these conditions, is that after 21 days, their body falls apart because there is no motivating principle or thought of which it is a manifestation, maintaining it any longer. And it's as if, as long as you want to have a hallucination, you've got to have somebody thinking the hallucination, and when there's nobody around thinking it, the hallucination falls away, including the body at that point. That only happens under few conditions. Now, we have interesting models in history to work with, you see, because we have not only a Buddha who goes all the way through and ends in the seventh plane, which is the Buddha state, and then comes back in and plays out the role for many years as a bodhisattva, meaning stays on this plane at the same sense as he's finished with all planes. We also have the model of a Christ who I can comfortably deal with as a being who doesn't come up through the ranks, so to speak, but is a direct manifestation of mind into matter in order to play out a certain part. Now, this is a different kind of a storyline for us to work with, because it is as if a sixth or seventh chakra being takes a gross body manifestation for a certain function in the total drama of man's coming out of the illusion. You see, he's playing his part in it in that way. Because there is rhyme and reason and law and order at each of these planes of existence. And there are beings that are existing at these planes of existence, because only at the plane below the fourth do you need to maintain a body. There are beings that do exist who have personalities and all kinds of individual differences, but they are not manifest in bodily form. They are not manifest on this particular frequency that you and I can pick up through our senses and our thinking mind. This does not refute their existence. It merely means our instruments at this moment and this way of doing it can't know them because we don't know how to measure them. We can sometimes meet them, and I can meet them when I will leave this particular plane, as if I'm tuning my television receiver, which turns out to be tuning into various nerves, or what are called in the Sanskrit nittis, or as if they are like electrical finer receivers in my body. There is, for example, a type of yoga that I work with called Nad Yoga, which is the yoga of inner sounds. That is, I put in earplugs and I listen. And you can hear, for example, you might hear the ocean roar, or crickets, or the sound of a crowd in a railroad terminal, or flutes, or various, there are a variety of sounds. They're all organized sounds.